Grateful and happy to have my friend John Prophet with me. And John is a part of a project, Mosaic Mountain Village. Right, John?
That's correct. Yeah.
So it's a pretty exciting project. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the eco-village movement in general and the history of it and where it's currently at. I feel like there's like a revival happening. I think there's been a lot of lessons learned, and you've been a part of that, and you've been studying that deeply, and we'll kind of talk about where we see it going in the future as well. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome everybody. Glad you're all here. I was thinking of like, okay, I think of like the 60s was kind of like what I think of, like a lot of movement happening. It's a lot of the stuff that I got connected to kind of got started around late 60s, early 70s. But I was thinking, like, let's go way, way, way back. Kind of, because I think every culture sort of has this story that, you think of like Genesis, for example, right? Eden, like there was a time where we were living in this great harmony and balance with nature, and something went awry. What exactly happened? There was maybe we got too caught up in the ego, or too much some kind of connection was lost there, that it feels like we kind of have it, that sense in our DNA, like we kind of have that remembrance, and we're trying to reconnect to that proper balance and harmony with the world around us.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of factors at play. I think people join together historically because we're social creatures. I think that there's a survival component to that's necessary. Those things evolve simultaneously, I think. I think the thing that took us away from that really dramatically more currently would have been the Industrial Revolution. Would have been the whole movement of propaganda, Edward Bernays and the marketing agenda, kind of taking things out of the realm of presenting the value proposition of something in terms of standing the test of time, quality, relationally, and turning it into much more oriented towards self-centeredness and immediacy, immediate gratification. As you see, like the trends in magazines, right? They took epic titles initially, like Time and The World, and if you scale it down a little bit, USA, right? These magazine titles, but like as you go through the decades, you see them getting more and more self-absorbed, right? Because like I think there's now a magazine called Self, right? There used to be a magazine called We. It's just like it just came it all it, as it went down the line, it gotten more and more promoting this narcissism in society. And when you look at things transactionally all the time, and there's a probably an evolutionary component to that too. But when you really like all of these things are energetics that are fed in one direction or the other. It's like the two wolves story, right? It's like whichever one you feed, that's the one that's going to be strong. So if you feed the one that's around, that's more geared towards self-obsession and self-importance, that's the one that's going to be strong. And we have collectively as a civilization fed the one that's much more geared towards self-centeredness and self-absorption. And I think religion initially tried to help with that, but then religion got co-opted too very often. And really made it about, less about the community, which you would have seen, looking at the ancient groups like the Essenes and things like that. You would have seen much more of a collectivist kind of energy. Whereas, and those things still exist, I think today they definitely do. But as a whole, we have kind of lost touch with that. That takes a whole sort of reorientation of how we function in society, and we've demonized it, and it's brought it upon itself in many ways. Many communities have created situations whereby they are rightly judged for impropriety, you know. That said, our entire civilization is pretty much that. So it's hard to, you know, call the kettle black. It's like it's a concentrated thing that you see in certain communities where you'll look at, you know, whatever, like the Osho community, or let's think of some of the, you know, even some of the ones here locally where Earth Haven or things like that, where people look at them kind of sideways if they aren't familiar with that idea. As you know, just this kind of hippie thing or this communist thing or whatever their judgment is around that, not really understanding it's kind of a microcosm of the macrocosm in many ways. So, but I don't think you can come into those, they're precarious environments, you know, they require a certain level of, like, I don't know, global awareness of, you know, values and the significance of kind of prioritizing certain values over other priority or other values. It's hard to articulate like what's the most important part of that whole process. But practically speaking, from what I've seen is that you really do have to have an aligned set of priorities and aligned set of values in order for that to, for those people, those disparate personalities to come together and join forces for the common good. And that common good has to be more or less the same in all of their minds. And if you have forces that come in from the outside who don't either adapt to that set of values, then they become disruptive. And sort of, they're not likely to stay. They're either, if it's a weak community in the first place, they're potentially there as disruptors to break that community, whether they're doing it intentionally or by default. And if they're, you know, if the values are strong in the community and the bonds are strong in the community, then that person will be ejected from the community. And then some people have like judgment about that. It's like, oh well, you know, we should just let everybody in, or we, you know, this is what we're seeing with the whole thing with our own country, right? It's like, but that doesn't work. It just has shown itself time and time again to not work. That's why the Rome fell, because of the values of the Gauls who were allowed in to basically, you know, occupy positions of power and transform the way that civilization operated in many ways, right? So it just, as nice as that sounds on the surface, it's it just doesn't work. It's not like, there's not a, I mean, I want to use the term biology. There's not a biological precedent for that on any level. It's like saying, hey, you know, this fox is going to happily cohabitate with this pack of wolves. It's like, well, where have we seen that in nature? Does that exist anywhere? It doesn't. There's a reason that it doesn't, because they operate very different spheres, you know? I don't know if that's a good metaphor or not, but yeah. So that to me is like one of the priorities, is like getting really clear on what your values are, if this is a path that you're going to go down, and then holding fast to those values, and then being merciless in your curation of that in terms of the other people who you bring in. Now, that also requires a certain discernment on the part of whoever the founders are too, because it's like, it's this delicate balance of, you need the diversity, you need the eclecticism, you need all of this juice that comes from all these disparate personalities. And also it's like the Venn diagram, somewhere the most important pieces have to be, those circles have to overlap. And that overlap point is the point where you can all come together and create something profound. And that can be many circles, and were they all over? What is the Japanese term for that? Do you know? Kaiji.
I do not.
Starts with a K. Yeah, it's basically like, you know, you look at it. They use it in reference to like where your passion and your talent and your skill and your, you know, all those things overlap. Like that's your kind of dharma. You know, that's mm-hmm. your juice to bring to the world. I look at it as like those are the disparate personalities, and but where those personalities overlap, that is the crux of what your community will flourish into at some point.
I think also interesting, like to think about the community. When people think about community, they generally think about it about people, you know, and getting along with each other and being in harmony. And then I love the idea of kind of expanding that definition outward to being in community with the land, with the sky, with the birds, with the squirrels, with the, you know, whatever is, whatever, all the different beings that are around you, and really thinking of those components, you know, the, from everything from the plant life to the animal life to the earth to the sky, as part of that community and living in the symbiotic relationship with that community. It feels like that's a big part of the movement that you're speaking of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, some of these things are taking place in a very urban area and they're doing very well. So, you know, they don't necessarily have that option. They're kind of contained by their environment. If you have that option, and if that's, you know, if that's the luxury that a particular group has, I think it's super important to do that. You know, and there's some, I don't know how to say it. Like, you come into a space, like, for example, where we're at, you know, I come to this space thinking like, this is all ancient, you know, this place that I'm occupying is ancient, like all the trees and everything. And it is, you know, the place itself, of course, is very old. These mountains are very old. But for example, the trees, the nature that's here, much of this wasn't here 60 years ago or 70 years ago. Much of this is all new growth. This was all clear cut cattle ranches, you know, farms, tobacco farms. So, you know, it's kind of, there's this almost like nostalgic sort of admonishment of, oh, how things were or whatever, but we really don't have actual history of how things were. Like, we're not necessarily maintaining anything of antiquity. And I'll give you a good example, like the guys who have done some work for us on the land here, you know, they're older school locals. And, you know, they're very much like, you know, you guys from out west come out here and think you have to baby everything. You're like, oh, don't take that tree, don't tree. You know, it's like none of these things were here, you know, like I said, 60 or 70 years ago. They're much of this is invasive. So you don't have to be all precious about it, you know. So that also puts perspective on what it is that you're trying to create. I think at the end of the day, you have to create something that works for the people who live there, right? And so that may require being it's not unconscious about it, but not being so tethered to a kind of, for lack of a better word, like hippie, you know, ethic that just
not being
says
like
don't touch anything. Yeah, yeah, like, oh, we can't do that. You can't cut that. You can't dig there. You can't, you know, and that there's that happens too in places. And I think that kind of puts the kibosh on a lot of different things. You know, every creature is terraforming almost, you know. It's like every creature on the planet is finding a way to create their own home. I mean, if you look at what ants do to the world, you know, termites do to the world, like some birds, not all, you know, some animals live light and some animals tear shit up, you know. And I think there's a sweet spot in there where we're creating something and terraforming something that is going to work for the group that we're, you know, creating, so that they're all fed, that they're inspired, that they're, but also like is moving, you know, it's also a bad choice to like fight nature, you know? So there's that being aware of like, you know, you're working an uphill battle in certain instances. If you're trying to, if you've gotten onto a piece of land or are in a particular situation in nature where you're trying to do things that are counterintuitive to what the natural world there has done forever, you know, and that has to do with like how the water moves through the land, you know, big forces, you know, how the wind and the sun move through the land, plants not as much, you know, but those main forces, the earth, wind, sun, water, like those are not to be trifled with, you know. You're like you're better off like moving and designing in accordance with how that works versus trying to, you know, or reinvent the wheel with that stuff.
It feels like when you're talking about the values, one of those values probably I would say would be living healthy, right? It's like kind of like what's because like what catalyzed this movement? It's like I think it seems like there was this kind of realization that okay, we're going down a road that's basically killing us.
Are you talking about kind of more of the current version of this movement, or historically?
Either way you want to go, I'm just thinking about kind of getting some of the values. Like there's sort of this like the kind of mainstream direction that things are going is not moving in a healthy way, and we want to create something that's more healthy. So I guess maybe a better way of saying it, it's not like don't touch anything, but it's like how do we live in our surroundings in a way that's healthy, right, for us in a true sustainable way.
I mean, I think it's also a path of discovery for each individual as they come into this thing. We are, our focus by necessity at this point is economic, of creating an economic engine that can help build the other things. We've got, now we've got baby chickens, we've got baby guinea hens, we've got a bunch of seedlings started. Like, all of that stuff is in place, and on the move. And we've got structures and things like that, and facilitation spaces being developed for wellness and for, hospitality, for entertainment, recreation, education, all of these kinds of things. And that's where we're at in terms of this phase of the project, out of necessity. And again, people can come at this, people have and do come at this from all angles, right? Like, some people just get a patch of dirt and they start planting, and that's what they do. And their whole thing is about food production, and being sustainable and regenerative in that regard. And that's admirable. And I think that's super important. And that's on our books as well. But we're not in the position to just, well, I should say, it's not our priority to just do that. Like, what we're realizing is, like, for me anyway, like, my observation is that you've got to have the facilities for people, that feel welcoming, comfortable, inspiring to, like, I guess there's, it comes from my old school Christian background of a certain kind of, like, preaching, proselytizing, right? But in this way, it's a form of preaching that is experienced by just showing up and feeling inspired by what somebody is doing. It's not so much spoken, just lived. And so that's important to me. And I know, as I've traveled around and spent a lot of time in these different places, what has spoke to me, and then what has been off-putting to me. And in terms of a long-term commitment, it's great. I've been to places in Costa Rica, and they've been doing amazing work. But, like, for me, there it wasn't going to be a it wouldn't be a long-term solution for me, because they weren't interested in the same things I was interested in at their core. Like, they're really drilled down into a particular area of interest, whether that's the permaculture thing or whether it's the natural building thing or whatever. I love all of that stuff, but I didn't want to make something that was only about that stuff, So, yeah, I mean, everybody's kind of going to come at it at their own angles. I mean, I think what we're really trying to create, both Chris and I are very eclectic people. We're interested in a lot of different things. We're artists, we're into really great, holistically produced food as much as we can get access to that. And, ultimately, as we go down the rabbit hole, we realize, like, if we really want the cleanest stuff, we're going to have to produce it ourselves. So you just kind of start whittling away at all the things that society is no longer offering you in a way that feels nurturing. And you just start going, well, how can we provide those things for ourselves in a way that does? And then, how can we provide those things for others in a way that inspires them to rethink their position in society, maybe question the legitimacy of what it is that they're doing. I mean, some people are, I think, quite content in that, and, whatever. I don't know judgment, but I just don't think any of those things, and I haven't thought this for a long time, none of the way the world operates, to me, it was always just a matter of kicking the can down the road. You're like, somebody else is going to pay for what you're doing, you know, as a society. And when we just stepped out of that realm of thinking like, well, how can we do that? And, you know, and this is, it gets kind of provocative at a point where you really do start thinking of like, okay, I'm not a person who believes we're overpopulated at all. I think I've traveled the world. There are plenty of empty land masses that are plenty fertile but it's like how we sort of oriented society, kind of just like congealing everybody into these city centers and turning them into these cogs of output. Like that was the problem. Yeah. Taking people out of this, teasing them out of their rural. And don't get me wrong, like I'm not trying to idealize rural life in certain times in our history was brutal. So I'm not saying that's the answer either. But there were, I think, pockets of people, the people who did work collectively, I think did have a really good life. I think did have their needs taken care of and did have the social need and the social fabric there. I think there are examples of healthy, kind of more rural, quote unquote, primitive civilizations that probably had a really good quality of life. And, but you don't hear about that. You know, everything is painted with this brush of, oh, it was just hard and it was brutal. And now we're here at the apex and thank God for factory farming. And, you know, it's just like, and everybody's just getting wise to like the total nonsense that story is now. And the fact that they've just been lied to over and over again about our own history. You know?
I think it's pretty clear now that the American city is collapsing.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. It's in pretty bad shape. And that was one of the few positive things that came out of the whole COVID era was people were working remotely and they were like, oh, I can live wherever I want now. I don't need to live in New York City or Los Angeles or San Francisco anymore. And there has been this kind of, for the first time in, I don't know how long, very, very, very hundreds of years, I think I'm noticing a movement away from the urban areas and more into, there's like a, you know, where people have been going into the cities away from the rural areas for so long. I think there's a reverse movement happening that's exciting and I'm just noticing it in, you know, the networks that I'm connected to. But I wanted to ask you about, yes, because you've been looking at these eco-villages and tential communities and studying them. And what are some of the patterns that you've noticed about like what's worked and been successful? And then what are some kind of things to notice that don't work and that haven't been successful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I've noticed specifically, kind of going back to what I said earlier, is like the cohesion of the values that the people who occupy that place is. It's almost like, again, this is kind of going into my business and back branding and marketing background, but it really is kind of like, what is the brand of the community, you know, because it's like, if you're clear about what that is, then you attract, you have to do less filtration intentionally. Like it kind of weeds people out. It's like, hey, we're a community of like post-apocalyptic, you know, road warrior, you know, steampunk people or something. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, that's going to weed out a whole host of people right out of the get-go. You don't have to ask questions about it. So like, if you're really clear about what that is, you immediately attract just generally like-minded people. Mm-hmm. Just like starting a meetup group, you know, you just name it right, or you position it right. So I think that's a big one. I think, you know, there's got to be a coherent vision. I think that has proved itself very powerful. That can also parlay into like the cult-like leader position, you know. So that obviously has to be a discerning position there too. But there's got to be somebody who's got a clarity about how all these things, these disparate pieces, come together and how they're going to work in tandem. It's not like anybody can really know how all that's going to work together. Cause when you're talking about people, you know, with all of their stuff, you know, you can't micromanage that. All you can do is sort of like maybe encourage a wave and then hopefully ride that wave, you know? And I think like, as I did in my band days, you know, you find the right people for the right job. You're curating. You're really in a position of curating the right people for the right job. And just letting them take ownership, you know, letting them have their leadership role in their space. And that encourages leadership in people, because that's what you need. You need a lot of leaders. You know, it's not just like one leader and a bunch of followers. It's like a lot of leaders in their silo. And that the people who are less knowledgeable in that skill, let's say farming, or let's say building, or whatever that is, they have the people who are really into that thing as their kind of team, like followers, if you will, students, whatever. And so I see it as kind of like, you know, building community is like building a building, you know, and what kind of, depending on what kind of building you want to build, is what kind of materials you're going to need, you know, and what kind of environment you're building in. So I look at that as kind of the metaphor for that. So, you know, clarity of values, like empowering your people and curating right the right people for what you're doing, and then empowering them. Because ultimately, what I at least am trying to do is create a place that is resilient enough that it can absorb into itself the less fortunate, the less functional, the less conscious, and not be taken down by it, because I've seen that happen as well.
Let's talk about your project.
So yeah, our project is, it's called Mosaic Mountain Village. We settled on that name. And it's funny because that just came, you know, we're obviously, there's the alliteration thinking about that. And there's also all the things that are happening up in this valley here in Barnardsville. And so we're thinking of like the sound, the name, and, you know, Hawk and Hawthorne, Mountain Light Sanctuary, Laughing Waters, you know, like all these different places that are in the area, and thinking like, okay, what's different, and, you know, different but still kind of convey some of those qualities. We happen to have a giant mountain on our property that's about 3,000 feet, so that seemed relevant. We have a beautiful creek running through the front, almost a river, not quite. And so there was that component. You know, it was like community term, village term, like what, you know. So there was those things to consider, like what this is ultimately going to be. But Mosaic came from we have a game here that's like a big one of those like long, elaborate civilization building games is what it is, and called Mosaic. And it's really cool. And I just, it was just musical to me, Mosaic Mountain. And started messing with the logo, and kind of, you know, utilizing that as a way to convey the idea. So Mosaic Mountain Village is what we settled on. And what I really like about that idea is that because we're such an eclectic bunch here anyway, that's what a mosaic is, right? It's a mosaic is this kind of tapestry of disparate pieces coming together to make something beautiful. When you're talking about a tile mosaic, it's broken tiles from all kinds of cups and plates and all these different things, you know, actual tiles, and it's like all pieced together to make this beautiful piece of art. And I was like, well, that feels super, super appropriate, because like we're all kind of broken in our own way, you know. And in coming together, we like find the whole, you know. And coming together as a community, we create something new out of these broken pieces, you know. And so it feels very like there wasn't that much thought into it initially. Like it was more like just trying to come up with something linguistically, but there was an intuitive sense of the power of the mosaic. And so yeah, and it's really like our thing is creating a space where we can, it's like the phrase came to me like invest in a community that will invest in you. You know, it's like you don't really hear that from other communities, as far as I've seen, you know, where it's like the goal here is to be able to invest into the sovereignty of the individuals coming in to participate with us, to empower them, to encourage them to be at their best and to create from their best place. and to heal, you know. And so that's kind of the guiding force with what the bigger vision of the thing is. Like I said, at the moment, it's really about creating the economic engine. That's the most important thing, because I feel like once that is in place, that will help support the other things that we want to that we want to do, you know, that we want to offer to people, and that we want, like, the people who are actually living here and participating, like, that what they do, their life and their work are just interwoven into this place. So that feels like it's on track to kind of go that way. And, you know, again, you can sort of manage and you know, kind of guide and do all the things that you can do for a place, but you know, you're constantly reminded that there are bigger forces at play. And so you as a guide for this thing, for me at least, is like, I have to remind myself to, you know, just be in my centered, discerning place. I think the key element at the moment is just like discernment, you know, of like of knowing, not necessarily letting my own straight up just like bias get in the way of letting a force kind of come in, you know, into this space and bring something unique that I might otherwise initially just push away because, like, oh, it's not my tea, you know. It's like allowing for that, but also, like, you know, I've been burned by allowing for that too. So I that's a fine line that I have to walk, because it's also like, do I trust this as like just a genuinely discerning assessment of the situation, or am I being triggered and operating from that, you know? And then so that's an interesting line that I have to walk a lot. Because, you know, when you put this thing out there, everybody and their mother really does want to be a part of it. It's like you get people coming at you from all different angles. And I like that. As a marketer, I want all those people, because I also want to filter through all of those people to find the gems. You know, I'm digging through looking for gold in this situation.
Okay. Yeah, a couple things coming to mind. One is, well, when I first you and I first got connected and started sharing time together, you were in Austin, Texas, and then you came out to visit and explored Western North Carolina, and you know, showed you around a bit. And but I know you've explored, you know, you've looked at places all over the world. And what is it about the particular region you're in now that you find so special about it?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because before I landed here, you know, so there was the Texas life 2 years ago, and then there was a lot of shifts, my parents having passed, Krista's mother having passed. So there's a lot of death in the family and a lot of transition. And in that time, we had sold the house and kind of just become migrants, you know, just moving around and hopping from place to place. And we went back to Arizona, which was my home state. And that was the first time in a long time I really didn't feel like Arizona was my home anymore, which was different, you know, for me to experience and integrate. And then, of course, Montana, which I love in many ways, but just too extreme winters for my taste. But I mean, there's certainly, and we, you know, we talked about going to Mexico, we talked about Costa Rica. I mean, there was a lot of different places that were potentially on the table. We were seriously looking at Ecuador for a while. We had a friend who moved down there, and Vilcabamba. So yeah, we were looking at a lot of things, and all these, you know, the data points come in, what's going on in our world, like our country, what's going on in their country, the politics of that. But when I basically was in Arizona for about 6 months, came back to Texas, and just realized I couldn't be in Texas anymore. And it was a hard no. Like, I was tolerating it for a long time, but I just couldn't. I knew I couldn't. It was destructive to my soul on many levels. And so, you know, I had to sort of come to terms with the idea that I may have to, like, cross-country parent, which I wasn't excited about at all. But I felt really I don't know. It felt like a definitive call to be here. I had you and I had Dr. K and that, tribe. But I think it was more than that. I don't know how really to describe it. I definitely feel the connection to the mountains here. All last summer, I remember every time I got on the road in the car to drive somewhere, I was just in total gratitude of the sky and the blue sky and the green leaves and the forest, and it just all felt really, really nurturing. And the water, the abundance of water everywhere. I think I'm a fire sign, right? Whatever emphasis you want to place on those ideas, but I need earth and water, I think, to sort of help chill me out. Because when I'm in a hot place, I feel hot, heated, like aggressive, more fiery. And I'm recognizing that softening being in an environment like this and being more, just grounded. And right now, again, like I feel that even in light of the fact that I'm just going 90 miles an hour trying to build this place out in the way that we want to build it and in the timeline that we want to build it. So I feel like it's a good juxtaposition to my natural personality, and it helps just sort of like soften the blow.
I totally resonate. I think the Appalachian Mountains are just so special. And I always think of it as like grandmama energy. That's kind of how I feel there. It's kind of the way you're
Boy.
describing it, it's kind of a soothing space to be in.
When you had come to Texas to stay with us, you were thinking about leaving. And so what was it about it at that point where you were thinking potentially over
That's an
for
interesting topic. So I think there is something that's lacking in the kind of general Asheville region that I think you're actually helping to bring to the area. And what I felt was really lacking was basically like a masculine presence. I think that
Yeah.
it's been a place for kind of like a sanctuary for the feminine, which is great. I think we both like the feminine.
Yeah.
But the balance of that masculine needs to come in more. And
Yeah.
so I was really my friendship with you, I was like, oh, this guy's on my path, the conscious guy, Matt, but also masculine. Just a lot of resonance that we had that was fulfilling for me. And I was connecting with some other people in that area that also had that component. So even a guy like Roblin Festi, over at Mandala Springs, he went out to Austin and he was like loving it. He stayed for like a couple months. He was having so much fun talking to all these different people and stuff. But I think he kind of came to the same conclusion that I came to and that you came to, I think, is just that like while there's a lot of great energy there's a lot of great people there. The where it's going to happen is in these mountains. There's something really special about these mountains, and there's something that is it's like you're being like held, you're being like just you're like resting in this. It's like it's something magical about it. So for me, I didn't connect to the land in the same way in Texas. I know the climate. I haven't even been there in the summer, but everyone's telling me like, don't be there in the summer. It's
Right.
unforgiving. And then the urban, I mean, Austin was a way bigger city than like I was thinking it was, right? Over a million people. And so I do think that what's where the where we're being called as human beings, we are being called to reconnect to the natural world. And I think that these mountains, like you said, it has the water, it has the plant life, it has all the things that are in abundance for us. So
Yeah.
and then there's something, just like you said, there's something almost mystical about the feeling that's here as well, that just when you feel it and you connect to it, it's special.
When we discovered this land, I came out here with our brother Jason, And probably had seen, three or four properties or whatever. But the school that we got our son into is just, the first time I saw that, I was just like, oh my God, it just felt like a little Eden, for kids. It was just magical. And I was like, wow, okay, so there's that. And then discovering this property, when we first drove into it, across the bridge, across the water, the sound of the water, that just permeates the whole land. The little alcoves, the giant rock formations coming out. I mean, it's just, and then there's a natural spring, so this is all natural spring fed, which is great. But not only that, but then the river itself is so clean, you can basically drink out of it because we're so far upstream. So it just feels like, yeah, in terms of practical and pragmatic, purely survival kind of choices, it just felt like a really idyllic piece of land to start creating this thing on. And not everybody has access to that. I mean, we have friends who have land out in now outside of Sedona. I mean, it's hard land, and that's just what they have. And so you've got to implement different practices, and this is just where the skill sets and the knowledge base and kind of going back into your ancestors or the ancestors of those regions who understood how to navigate those landscapes. I mean, by comparison, this is a cakewalk.
Yeah, and just the aesthetic beauty of the area. I think there's something that's inspires the soul
Without,
as well.
yeah.
And you've been through the winter now, and now we're getting this things are gonna start popping and wildflowers. And yeah, tell us about your vision. Tell us a little bit about the vision for Mosaic Mountain Village. Like how many
Yeah, so
people, structures, kind of what's in
yeah.
the fullness.
So it's an interesting piece of land, and it doesn't lend itself to, like in other places, like Texas would lend itself to people kind of like buying their acre and then just kind of cohabitating on a big flat piece of dirt. The land isn't structured like that. So what we've got is a big piece of pie shaped land, and it's 20 acres, and it's basically all riverfront there at the bottom in the valley, which is great. And we've got a big field that used to be tobacco field, and it's very terraced. So there's multiple layers. There's a logging road behind the house, the old farmhouse, and then it goes up to this point at the top, this peak that's around 3,000 feet. Most of that is you're not going to do much with it without a lot of terraforming and a lot of destruction. So that's not going to happen. At some point, we'll probably go up there and use some of the timber and just roughly hewn some kind of like meditation temple or gazebo, something that people can go up and watch the amazing sunsets that we get from the top there. But for the most part, it's all going to happen down the valley. And there's two sections at the lower part, both with septic, both with power running to them. So one side is going to be more of the commercial side, let's say, the economic engine, and then the other side is going to be the more communal side. And so what that looks like on that side, just by nature of the limitations of that piece of land, is essentially like a collective space for laundry, big kitchen, sort of like cool dining area, like the hangout space, even a big kind of facilitation space for group meetings and that sort of thing. And then everyone will have their kind of more individual like pods, and those won't be extravagant. They won't be plumbed per se. Maybe they'll be on the spring water. I don't know. We don't know yet. There are two really good springs over there that we can pull from. And of course, if we can drill in and get a well if we want to at some future date. And then the and so those people ideally who live over there, much of what they do livelihood wise would be related to what we're doing on the economic side of that. So that's building, that's making, that's facilitation, teaching, education related stuff, general, yard work, maintenance, turnover of the rentals. There's going to be a lot going on the economic side that is going to require people, people to do those jobs. And so it's ideal for the people who are going to participate in this thing, who want to do those kinds of jobs. Like we want to be a group of creators out here, literally creating things, building, hot tub, tongue and groove, dry saunas or hot tubs, or building structural things, but also making art, and making content and all of those things, as well as making food and farm to table products and homestead products, soaps, things like that. So like really kind of pulling in the same way, only a little more modern version of what like people at Heritage Homestead are doing. It's like they have their own economy out there, and they make fabrics from the sheep wool that they shorn, and they have their own grain and their own grain mill, and it's just like it's quite an extraordinary thing that they've built out there. And that to me has been one of the more inspiring versions of this, because it is so inclusive of so many industries. Like it's how a real town would run for the most part, because you need all things. And I hold out hope that technology, I'm not a Luddite in that regard either. I hold out hope that we can have enough discernment and wisdom to utilize technology in a benevolent way and not have it become our, overlords, T3000 overlord. I like the idea, that cyberpunk vision of like, having your helper robot out there help you farm. I think it's a cool idea.
That Heritage Village, that's such a good example of how things don't happen by mistake or by chance, and synchronicities of things. Because I was actually driving to your place, and so this place, Heritage Village, is outside of Waco, Texas. So I'm driving for a while, and I'm like, I need a break, somewhere to like just stretch my legs and get a snack or something. So I see this exit for this Heritage Village. I knew nothing about it at all. And I get to the park, and I'm this is right before I get to your place. I get to the park, and I'm like, wow, what is this place? I'm going around and just amazed. And I'm like, I remember like calling you or texting you or something, and be like, I found this the most amazing place. It's like everything that we're talking about. And you're like, yeah, I know that place. And so, but it was like, I was supposed to obviously visit that place and share a time there. This reminds me of what you're talking about earlier about, you kind of have your vision of how it's supposed to go, but maintaining some openness to discern of maybe you're getting dropped in something that's for your benefit that you didn't take into account, and being available to that.
Totally. Yeah. And they're really good that way too, because it's not like, for what they are, you could easily assume that they wouldn't let certain people in. And I'm sure that they wouldn't, right? I mean, but they're a lot more open than you would expect from a community like that. That there are people there who aren't necessarily on the same tip spiritually, that they have their own little alcoves and little cliques and connections within that overarching value set that they have. But I found the people that I met who aren't necessarily on the exact same spiritual tip still have a understand and recognize the overarching values that hold that place together, that
Shared
bind that
values,
place together, of family, of connection, of like personal responsibility, of sovereignty, of compassion, of forgiveness. I mean, like these spiritual values that are timeless, that are glue for a healthy civilization.
Feels like accountability is a big one too, don't you think?
Say again.
Feels like accountability is an important value too.
Yeah. Personal responsibility. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So like I was in a village in Alaska, and it was like, they all occupied the same land. They all kind of had a general store. They somewhat worked when they felt like it. But it was interesting up there. They felt really, it was like a collective of very, very individualistic people, like a collective of people who just really only were a collective by the necessity of having to be a collective to get things done and to pool resources. But for all intents and purposes, you weren't going to see them partying together, And so, you've got every extreme, and then you've got the ones that all they do is party together and nothing gets done, So it's just like trying to find that balance. And, that has everything to do with, and this is funny, like what I've seen as a marketing professional for many years was this movement towards, so I used to work for a fashion college out of LA, and so, you learn the term couture, right? Which is not off the rack. What we've been given is a very much off the rack version of civilization, of community, of culture. It's all just been fucking spoon-fed, factory produced by some other people you know, whether they're corporate honchos or government honchos, saying like, this is what it's supposed to look like. And what I noticed in the business world in general was there was much more emphasis on personalization, right? And this kind of goes back to the me thing. So there is that component woven in there. But it was about like when you went to the Harley Davidson website, you could customize your Harley and kind of kit it all out the way you wanted to kit it out. And then, you know, Tesla was doing that. And then shoe companies were doing that. So you're getting this like couture kind of experience in the corporate world of like, well, how do I want this thing to look? You know, and then you realize like the first time I got on the internet and I just started typing nonsense words together to see if there was some chat group or forum based around that, realizing like whatever crazy thing you're into, there's probably a chat group for it, you know. And this was like, you know, in the 90s when screens were still black and green. But like, you know, so it's like whatever you're curating for, whatever you think like, oh, I really want to create a community around this thing or these ideals, these values, all you have to do is communicate that well enough and you will attract like minds to that. They exist. They're all out there, you know, and they want the same things. And I think that's kind of more of, you know, it's a neo-tribalism, I think, that's starting to emerge. And I think that, you know, people associate tribalism with violence and war and da 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 da. But I don't think that's necessarily the way it has to be. I think there are plenty of tribes throughout history who occupied the same territories more or less without having to butcher each other, largely because those territories were abundant, rich, you know, like abundant and rich with resources. And so that's kind of where the sort of benevolent use of technology comes in, is like, if we can terraform or create through holistic means, a richness of resources that we're not tethered to the grid for energy, that we're not tethered to a particular bioregion for food, that we can use these technological advancements to create abundance in all kinds of places, that's going to mitigate the control of the state to be able to say, no, you have to be here. This is where the jobs are. This is where the resources are. This is where infrastructure is. It's like, no, we don't need any of that. Like, your version of that sucks, quite honestly. And you failed to sort of optimize for the best, the most good for the most people most of the time. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's just siphoned up to the top and everybody else gets to eat the breadcrumbs if they get any, you know. And yeah, that's the game, you know.
Yeah.
So it's yeah. it's like,
it definitely feels like more and more people are waking up to that and realizing that, and they're looking for an answer. And I think the Eco Village movement and the project that you're a part of is, I mean, and all of my research, I mean, that's the answer, right? And I would add like,
yeah,
I would add the inner work too, the spiritual work. But those two components, the inner and the outer, I mean, that does seem like that's the way forward. Yeah.
So, and if you create a, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I'm an environment nerd. Like, I really, in the sense that, like, I have always kind of harped on, you know, much to some of my friends, like, chagrin, the idea that the environment, if you set up an environment or you occupy an environment that is conducive to a particular way of functioning in the world, setting it up so that it optimizes for at least a sense of like kind of neutrality in it, that it doesn't provoke one thing or another, but it just allows a sort of neutral space to be occupied so that you can actually be reflected back on yourself of like where your leanings and tendencies tend to get over exaggerated or underserved, right? And so creating a place that's just setting up a container that's kind of both crucible and like a nest that can feel safe to do really heavy intense work in, but like there are certain parameters around that. Like, for the most part, certain people I think are wired to be able to like kind of just punish themselves in a sense, like to get to this idea of healing, if that makes any sense. But I think for the most part, you know, you have to sort of ride that line of creating this sort of nurturing space that also is, when it brings in harshness, it does that in a way that there's a consciousness, at least in terms of whoever is facilitating that. Yeah. And, you know, when you develop that level of resilience, because, you know, it's debatable whether, you know, there's the that nature is there to like coddle you or nurture you. Like, I think the natural world is what it is, and you are in relationship with that, and that it gives you every opportunity to confront yourself, your own limitations, your own strengths, your own resilience and resolve. And I think that's one of the things in terms of like the personal growth stuff of the inner work is like creating this space holder for people to just be, you know, even the beauty of being able to just have people come and sit on a hammock, swing from a hammock by the creek for 8 hours and just be in that is healing. Like, nature will do the work, will do most of the work for you if you allow for that. But, you know, that said, it's like people need a place to use the restroom. People want to shower now and again, you know, people need to eat, you know. So it's like you've got to create these sort of infrastructural things, I think, you know, unless you're really sending people out on the vision quest type adventure, you know. So this is like the softball version of that, and then, you know, you kind of graduate, kind of build up your strength, your will, and your resilience to kind of do some of this deeper work. But I think that you have to have a strong container to hold that. I've noticed, because it can get really loopy if that container isn't there. It's just like too many people, too frenetic all the time, you know, at the same time. And so there's got to be that sort of like, okay, this is the container and this is what we're doing for this right now. It's, I don't know, like even with ecstatic dance, you know, and Austin was a big ecstatic dancing, you know, it's like, it is this sort of container, but you would see people sort of take advantage of it in a way that you weren't sure whether it was appropriate or not, because you don't know what the boundaries of this container are. Like, what are we here for? Are we here to facilitate this kind of clear outburst of emotional distress, or are we not? You know, and so if that's not articulated, then you don't know what's appropriate. You don't know, and that kind of division and you know, a little like chaos within people. So it's like when you do the thing that you're going to do, you want to be real clear about what it is and what it isn't, so that everybody knows, like, okay, this is, it's fine. There's no judgment that you're in this place, but this isn't what this is for, right? We'll create another container for this level of work, you know, this level of pathology, if that's what you want to call it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
I welcome it. I think I love the idea of being able to facilitate that here, not just like fun parties and bonfires and dinners and, you know, all that stuff that we will also do, but like really get into the nitty-gritty of that work, because I think that's,
yeah.
you know, it's all relevant, but it's like that's the stuff that's gonna transform people, you know, and let them go out into the world with new resolve.
That, yeah. So what is, so paint us kind of the grand vision. Is, you know, there's like, I'm imagining there's like workshops happening and some classes happening
Yeah.
and concerts, music concerts happening and bonfires
Yeah,
and
film night.
film night. Nice. I like that. Film night. Some space for meditation or prayer time. Other things that you see happening there as well? Or does that kind of cover it?
That's most of it. I think there's, you know, there we want like the Skillshare kind of vibe. We want people to like, you know, we want to host, you know, how to tap into a spring. We've got a guy who's really expert at that, you know, and how to turn that into a healthy, nurturing spring for your water source. We want to do hydroelectric power, like basically off-grid homesteading, really the practical skills of this stuff.
I was just going to ask how people can support the project right now.
Yeah, I would say, well, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of levels. I mean, we are you know, still in that phase of building, you know, so there's like the physical support of actually like helping to do land work, you know, and build and that thing. But then, you know, there's economic support by way of looking for different investors for different parts of this project, looking for skilled people who want to come and kind of do the homesteader part of this thing, like the animal raising and the food production and the food forests and all of that kind of stuff that we're just beginning doing. And then, and then there's just the kind of like soft level support of just following us on the Instagrams and, some of the other channels that we'll be starting, and getting on our mailing list is probably a good idea, if they want to be part of these things. I mean, the model is essentially like kind of like a, and there's a reason why we're doing it this way, is to try and mitigate, how much involvement the state has in our business, but basically creating a private membership association, kind of like River and Imani do down there at their place, in Tennessee. And so that gives people, that will give people access to all the amenities that we have here. So it's kind of like having, it's almost like if a timeshare was a campground and had all these great amenities, you get access to all of those amenities, when you come and stay. So there's that component. And then for people who want to create passive income for themselves, they can basically sponsor a structure, and then we split the revenue from the structure that they sponsor, and
Oh,
they
that's
just get a
interesting.
cut quarterly check. So they get a quarterly check from their rental unit, which just happens to occupy this land. We manage it, we flip it, all of that stuff. They just basically have to pay for the building of it. And so they can, and they get their return, and they can stay at it when they feel like it. So they can block the calendar, and then they can just come stay and participate in all the things, or they can stay wherever they live, and they can rent it out and make money off of it.
That's a cool model. I like that.
Yeah, just looking for ways to kind of make a win-win thing for as many people as it is. It's 20 acres, but realistically, what we have access to genuinely use, is much more like 5, maybe 10 max. Honestly, probably not much. So, it's not like 10 flat or 20 flat acres where you could really subdivide that out and do a lot more with it. So it's just the limitation of the land that we have. But I think with the combined use of solar and water, hydropower, and things like that, we'll have more than enough energy to like power the different things that we need, on top of just being connected to Duke until that system potentially fails, and whatever that looks like, but backup and reserve in place when that happens, ideally.
You guys have a website yet, or what's the best way for people to connect to
I would say just follow on Instagram at the moment and just kind of stay in touch there, and I'll be able to post. We do have, the mail, email is easy. That's just mosaicmountainvillage@gmail.com. And then I'm going to put up probably just like a landing page initially, and that'll just kind of direct people, to different things, just so that we can keep people in the loop who are interested in the project. And then anybody who wants more details, can email for specific details.
And are you Mosaic Mountain Village on Instagram? Awesome. It's inspiring to
Man.
what you're creating. Anything else you want to share with the world before we wrap it up?
Let me think. I would just say, if anybody's interested in this movement, I would say start taking it very seriously sooner than later, because I think that it's going to be, it's just for one's own benefit. I think it's unfortunate that people, are mostly motivated by discomfort. So I feel like in this area of the curious, they're curious, but they haven't been squeezed enough in the form of discomfort by the system at large, that they are willing to actually step out of the comfort zone and make the bigger moves that need to be made. And so I would just caution people that staying in the comfort zone, that comfort zone can shift really quickly, without your consent. And it's better to be conscious enough to sort of preempt that thing that happens without your consent, so that you're not blindsided by it, and that you have something, in the wings, or a plan, or something in place, a community in place, a group of people that you can turn to, because hunkering down by yourself with whatever sort of materials that one thinks they need at the end of the day is good. It's better than nothing, but at the end of the day, you really are going to need to band with people. And in doing so, you're going to be doing a lot more than just saving yourself. You're sort of you're reorienting how we do civilization, how we do our groups, our tribes of people, and you're taking the juice, the power, the fuel away from the matrix, you know, to use that term. To
Right.
you're disempowering that by creating your alternate version of that, you know.
Yeah, that relates to
So
yeah, I love what you shared there. And that relates to the economic component too, of like siphoning out of the matrix. So instead of circulating the energy into the matrix, circulating it between a community that, you know, more and more is outside of that system. So
It's just like shopping at your farmer's market, you know, instead
exactly.
of going to the grocery store. You
Exactly.
just keep it local as much as you
Yep.
can. It doesn't have to be like people living in your front yard, you know, but you know, it may turn into that at some point, but it just you just start by just keeping it tight, you know.
Well, thank you for being here, John. Thanks, everybody,
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
for being a part of it. And we'll see you in the next now.